For June 1st, 2017, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 212. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me, as always, co-host of the show, senior front-end developer, Mike Herschel. Hey Mike.
How are you doing?
Super. What's going on?
A lot, evidently. Evidently, there's some potential changes coming with Drupal governance.
A lot of times, people in the Drupal community, it's something that they might kind of know in the background is kind of going on, but really don't have a clear picture of what's going on.
Or even that there is governance.
Well, you know, a few shows ago, we had some folks on from the Drupal Association that talked about their role in maintaining Drupal.org.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, there's stuff happening in the background.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about some of that stuff.
Yep. First up, we have the executive director of the Drupal Association, who has a background in business side in tech and work in government, currently transplanted to Boise, Idaho for the summer. Welcome, Megan Sinicki.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Megan.
Is it nice and cool as opposed to Tucson?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. By like a good 20 degrees. I'm in heaven.
Also with us today, we have a leadership and empathy coach, a former DrupalCon keynote presenter from DrupalCon Los Angeles. She's currently facilitating some Drupal community discussions. She's an organizational designer, a user experience designer. At times, she's been known to live on a boat, but I hear she's on land these days. Hey, Whitney Hess.
Hello there.
Hi.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, can you just tell me real quick, what is an empathy coach?
Well, it is a way of me explaining that I work with leaders and their teams to help them build empathy for their customers, their colleagues, and themselves.
Right on.
This episode, we're talking about Drupal governance. We're going to talk a little bit about the past and the history of the Drupal governance and talk about what's currently being done and what we're looking to do in the future.
So, Megan, can you just kind of give us some background? What is the role of the Drupal Association these days?
That is a great question. Well, so the Drupal Association's role is to unite the community to help everyone build and promote the software. So basically, we do whatever is needed to help the community just do what they do best. And so, you know, that's a pretty broad mission. And we have kind of bound it to some real focus around bringing the community together at DrupalCon and on Drupal.org. And so we've run DrupalCon in North America and Europe. We've done them in other regions too, but we've kind of scaled back right now while we figure out a better model for supporting other regions. And then on Drupal.org, it was community built and got so big, has 20 million unique visitors annually. So that's a pretty big site for a bunch of volunteers to manage. And so now we have a small engineering team, about four people, who maintain it and improve the tools on it. And we are also starting to create some content to help promote the software on there too, starting with the front page and industry pages. So those are the two main ways that we achieve our mission. But there is so much more we can do. There's lots of need.
So you mentioned that Drupal.org was community built. So what, back in the mid-2000s, someone, Dries or someone else, just registered Drupal.org and said, hey, we're just going to throw up an instance of Drupal and get going on it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it just kind of was, you know, small and just a good start. And actually, it was when the server blew up and then Dries had to go
crowdsource.
Yeah, he like had $10,000, and he's like, I can't put this in my personal bank account. Like, Belgium's not going to like this very much. And it's kind of like through that, and I think the first DrupalCon, when there's tickets being sold for the first DrupalCon, if I got my history correct. But that's what resulted in having to create a nonprofit to begin with. And the precursor to the Drupal Association was in Europe. It was called Drupal VZW. And so, yeah. Everything was started by the community, and then eventually when they get too big, they come to us and we help manage them.
Okay. So what does the Drupal Association not do? Like, what would I think you would do, but you're like, no, I don't do that?
Good question. Well, there are kind of three divisions of governance. There's technical governance, community governance, and then there's the Drupal Association, and we have our own governance of how we manage ourselves.
Okay.
So we don't touch code. We provide the resources people need to come together and build the software, but we don't touch code or set the direction for it.
So when you say you don't touch code, I'm assuming you don't touch Drupal's like code. You know, like obviously you're building Drupal.org, but you're not committing as an official function of the DA back to the Drupal repository, correct?
Correct, that's right. So we don't touch code. We don't set the course for the direction of the software. And then also within governance, there's other things that kind of fall into all of that. If you go to drupal.org/governance, you can see it's slightly outdated, but you can see a few other working groups, like the documentation working group. Obviously, we might improve the tools for people to submit their documentation on drupal.org, but we're not writing the documentation. So there's the security working group, and obviously they're responsible for security for Drupal, the software, and security on drupal.org and all kinds of that's also outside of the Drupal Association. And then there's the community working group, which is outside of the Drupal Association, and that's community governance. And really that is a group that's chartered to help make Drupal, the community, as friendly as possible and welcoming. And they basically make sure that if there's an issue between community members, if someone's violating the code of conduct, they are a place to go to say, hey, I'm having a problem. I can't seem to resolve it myself. And they'll provide conflict resolution. And they have a kind of like a process to help people get through any sticking points, because sometimes that happens when you're working with people. But that's outside of the Drupal Association as well.
Just to be clear, if we could just kind of take your example a little bit further, Megan, you mentioned something about perhaps maybe helping out the documentation working group by providing something for them. So does that mean like maybe they said, hey, we need some money and we could put this great Who's It on the DA's infrastructure and then nobody would have to write documentation ever and it would be great and Drupal would be enriched because of that? That would be something you could do?
That is something we could do.
Doesn't that sound amazing? Yeah.
Sure.
So no one would ever have to write documentation ever, yeah, right? Mac Lee? Is that how it works?
As long as the DA supports them, you know, financially for that, right? It's a silly example, but just kind of helping to try and provide clarity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think right now we've redesigned the pages that they needed a new format, and mm-hmm. that's one way that we could help. We've definitely crowdsourced. You know, when Drupal 8 needed some help getting out the door, we crowdsourced funds so that we could give the money to those that could help unblock criticals. The money was used to fly them together and have them spend a week together. So we've definitely done things to fund really important initiatives like that.
So you mentioned code of conduct. What exactly is the code of conduct and where did it come from? And just tell us about it.
Sure. So the code of conduct is, you can find it on drupal.org/DCOC. And it is basically some standards for how we treat each other in the community. We have a really kind and welcoming community. We want to maintain that. And by no means is this like highly prescriptive. It's kind of like just some common things to follow. So be considerate, be respectful, be collaborative. When we disagree, we consult others. The code of conduct goes into detail, so you can kind of get grounded a little bit more on what that means. But it was created by the community,
mm-hmm.
and there are issue queues that you can find on Drupal.org where it was really like discussed in great detail by many community members. And I think they started by looking at the Linux Foundation's code of conduct as well as Ubuntu's, and I'm sure many others. And they talked about what are the problems we're trying to solve and how broad of a scope should this have. And so through all those different discussions that we have, in Drupal and kind of like your typical open source crowdsourcing of an end result, we came out with this deliverable, which is the code of conduct.
All right. And so you have the community working group. And so my understanding is the community working group is a group of people that if there's a perceived violation of the code of conduct, they'll kind of put on their black suits and get their brass knuckles and just go have little, you know, talks with people. Is that how it works?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's a group of volunteers. They are really wonderful human beings. This is not a typical volunteer job, like jumping in to an issue queue and helping people. It's listening. It's being patient. It's taking in information. It's helping people find words so they can go back and hopefully resolve things on their own. And if not, it's a lot of mediation. But they are very thoughtful. And I'd say also very mindful in how they approach these kinds of situations that come to them. They don't take actions. I'd say, you know, with a lot of speed, they're very thorough in their process.
That's important.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, 'cause they want to make sure that if they're helping everyone involved. Not just the person who came to them, and just to help find the right path forward. And so that's a lot of discussions
Yeah. I know several people on the community working group, and I have a lot of respect for them and what they do, because there's a lot of stress that can go into that too.
So just to keep my tree straight, who does the community working group report to? Like who's kind of in control?
Yeah, the working groups report to Dries as project lead.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how else is Drupal governed? My understanding is that there's a board of directors for the Drupal Association, correct?
Yes. So I mentioned what our mission is as the Drupal Association, and that's to unite the community to help them build and promote the software, and then it's the executive director's job to work with the board to come up with a strategic direction of, like, what does that mean? You know, we can't do everything, so where do we focus, and what does the community need the most right now, and what can we uniquely do for the community that no one else can do? And so right now, obviously, it's a lot of work on Drupal.org and DrupalCon, and so you have the board of directors that sits, you know, kind of like oversees the association and provides that strategic direction for us. And there's 12 board members that make up that board.
Okay. So how are the board members placed into the board? I've seen elections on occasion where I can log into Drupal.org and actually vote for people. How is everybody put there?
Yeah, great question. So our board functions with committees. And we have a nominating committee, and so there are board members and some non-board members. We're kind of going through, I think, some changes to update it as some people roll off. But they decide what kinds of expertise and knowledge and skills that we want on the board based on kind of like where we're heading as a project and as an organization. Mm-hmm. And from there, they will start coming up with names, and there are 10. So there's 12 board seats. 10 of them get selected by this nominating committee. And so the committee then comes up with names, and they might ask community members and board members for names of who matches these kinds of personas that they've created that they know they want on the board. And then the board votes those people in once they've, you know, been invited and interviewed. And, you know, we have a vetting process when we want to bring a new board member on, but the board votes for those 10 seats. And then the other two seats are the community at large board seats. And those are the ones that the community votes on. And they're 2-year terms. We kind of alternate years for when we do an election every year. So basically we're rotating someone new through every year, and they sit on that board for 2 years is the best way to put it. And it's to help us stay grounded and make sure we have the voice of the community on the board.
Makes sense. So what does a board member actually do?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, I have a bunch of good questions. I'm just kind of rolling them off.
That's good. So the ultimate job of the board is to come up with that strategic direction for the association.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have 2 to 3 retreats a year that they attend. They're 2-day offsites. They are not retreats in the sense of like spas, and they're not like that at all. You're stuck in like a hotel room or a convention center room, and we're looking at really tough problems. We're going through different exercises to come up with some, okay, well, how are we going to solve this for the community, for the organization? And what does this mean? And then it goes to the executive director to execute. But there's a lot of that. There's a lot of work on financial reviews. And so every board member has to approve the financials. So there's a lot of financial scrutiny, good questioning, advice that happens. And then we have committees and task force that we break out into. So that way you can have a certain expertise. Maybe it is more around, like, we have some board members that are really able to provide direction on the tooling study that we are doing currently. And so they'll be part of that task force and work with staff to say, like, okay, well, how do we make a decision if we go with our tools or GitLabs or GitHubs and kind of help guide those conversations. And then we have other board members that are helping us decide, well, how do we step further into that adoption journey and do a better job promoting Drupal at, say, DrupalCon? Who's not at DrupalCon that we should be inviting to, whether it's like the CIOs or the marketing people that are making purchasing decisions? And how do we make the conference expand to better serve that audience as well? So we have different task force for the community, or I'm sorry, the board members that can really advise us on those kinds of discussions. So I'd say those are like the main types of things that we do, but we do try to do, you know, those 3 retreats a year to have a lot of the big discussions. We have 2 virtual meetings a year. You know, we try to do about 5 hours of work with the board members each month for the committees. So, you know, it's definitely a commitment to be on the board. That's for sure.
Gotcha. So the board will vote on various, I don't know, things that come to it. Is it a simple majority that wins? Is there like a tiebreaker? Dries, is my understanding, he's on the board. Is his vote the same as other board members, or how exactly does that work?
That is a great question. I was just reading my bylaws the other day. I read them often just to make sure. I'm like, wait, what does that say? And what does that mean in real English, right?
Yeah.
Job to know all this. I still have to keep checking everything. So.
I'm not a big city lawyer, but...
Right. It's kind of when I have to look up like the same Drupal function that I've used a million times every single time. So, yeah.
Good. Okay. See, it's very relatable. We're all humans here. And so it is a majority quorum must be present.
Okay.
So we have 12 board members. That means 7 have to be present for us to motion a vote. And then we need the majority vote. So then you need at least 4, say 4 yeses for it to withhold.
Mm-hmm.
And then to answer your other question, Dries's vote is the same as anyone else's vote. So it's not like super, it's not like plus 7.
He doesn't get a Dries vote.
No, he doesn't get to roll like a 20-sided die and be like, add your 7 points to your vote. Like, it doesn't work like that.
All right.
So Megan, you as the executive director, who do you work for?
I work for the board.
Okay.
I work at the pleasure of the board. But you know who I really work for? I work for staff. That's who I tell staff all the time. I work for the staff because their job is to work for the community, and they're advocating for the community, working for them all the time, every day. They come to work really, really motivated and passionate about what they can do to serve the community, and they need someone to serve them. And I am the only person in a position to serve them. And so if I make their lives better and give them the direction they need, they're going to do a better job serving the community.
That's an awesome point of view. I've heard the analogy before that, you know, that your supervisors, position is more to be a coach, kind of like baseball. You know, you need to enable the staff to do, you know, to kick ass at their job. And it sounds like you're doing that. So thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is honestly an honor. It really is. They're the most amazing group of people. And, you know, good days and hard days, they just rally and they literally come to work every day motivated to see what they can do to help the community.
So the staff is all remote, correct?
Yes. Yep. We're distributed. Most of the people are still in Portland, but we're kind of still all over the place.
Including Boise?
Yep. Now Boise, Idaho.
We're talking with Megan Sinicki about Drupal governance. She's the executive director of the Drupal Association. Also on the podcast, but not yet heard from, we'll get to her in a second, Whitney Hess, who's been doing some community discussions or facilitating some community discussions within the Drupal community. We'll talk about that coming up right after this.
So basically, I'm going to say, hey, it's the organizers for Design for Drupal, Susan McPhee and Leslie Glynn. And then we're just going to ask you questions like, say, so tell us about Design for Drupal. And you're going to say, well, it's in June and we have Ethan Marcotte. And I'm going to jump in and say, oh, yeah, that guy's awesome.
Great. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. So tell us about Design for Drupal.
Well, it's coming up pretty soon, coming up in June. Our dates are June
23rd, 4th, and 5th.
We have some exciting things in store. This is our ninth year, I believe.
Yeah, and I hear you got a really, really great keynote this year.
Somebody pretty famous, Ethan Marcotte. I think they call him the father of responsive design. I think he coined that term.
That's pretty awesome.
And who else do you have besides Ethan?
We have Kelly Albright talking about agile design, which is a nice balance to Ethan's keynote.
Yeah, absolutely. I know Kelly. I've met him at Florida Drupal Camp before.
Yeah,
he's a great guy.
This is called Design for Drupal. Like, Drupal is not necessarily known for being super designer friendly.
Yeah, that's the idea, is to get designers and developers together and to have a conversation about design, you know, a deeper dive.
It's also to get people not necessarily in the Drupal community to come to the conference, because we have a lot of sessions that are design oriented, as opposed to, you know, things like Patent Lab and Sketch and those type of deals, so that they can come and participate in the conference and maybe learn a little bit about Drupal, find out what a great community it is, and, you know, then maybe use the design skills and maybe a new focus, or just use what they learn in whatever they're doing in the daily, you know, business.
So where is this fabulous conference happening?
It's happening at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
I think I've heard of that one, yeah.
Yeah. and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because we just want to thank them very much for hosting us.
And that's in Boston, Massachusetts.
We're called Design for Drupal Boston, but MIT is actually in Cambridge, across the Charles.
That's kind of false advertising there.
I don't know.
We know, but you know, we don't want to get confused with England.
Well, I will be there, and I'll be speaking. So I'm excited to meet you in person.
Nice. We're excited as well. We have a great mixer of sessions this year. We have more business focus on Friday.
Cool.
With more of the design sessions on Saturday. We also have something new this year, which is a hands-on training track. We're going to have a full two-day track where people can come and sit in and actually get hands-on experience using all the tools that they would need to do front-end work in Drupal.
That's very, very useful. All right. Well, thanks for coming on and telling us about Design for Drupal, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks and hopefully some listeners.
Thank you.
Great.
Design for Drupal's website is at design4drupal.org.
Thanks for having us on.
Hey, welcome back. We're talking community governance with Megan Sinicki and Whitney Hess and all the great things that happens. So what are the current challenges of the current model that we have with the board, and what needs to be changed? Or what's on the table for being changed? I've seen a couple of blog posts come up lately. Can you maybe talk about the blog posts first of all?
So yes, firstly, there's one blog post in particular that I think you're referring to, where we outlined what the process would look like, and this is very much a collaborative process. You know, right now we are just completing our community discussions, which I had the honor of facilitating. We conducted 7 of those sessions in person at DrupalCon Baltimore. And we had another 7 of those sessions online for the global community to participate in. And what we're doing first is just gathering as much feedback as we can on what needs to change, what isn't working for people, what people would like to see improve. And by then really synthesizing all of that feedback, we're able to get a better sense of what the community as a whole is needing. So when I was asked to come in and work on this, everything was put on the table to answer your question directly. No one, including Megan, including Dries, has said to me, we're willing to change everything but X. That has never been said. As with everything in the Drupal community, this is community driven. And we're really looking to the community for what they need and acting as facilitators to make that happen.
Okay. So is this looking like it's going to be like a major change in Drupal governance, which it would expand or contract or just change the model for the Drupal Association or Drupal governance? Will Dries be giving up any authority? Right now he's a benevolent dictator for life, which means that he has kind of the say to, you know, set the course for Drupal, although he typically delegates that to the community. Will there be any changes? And I don't know, I'm guessing that you might not know the answer to this, but what's the plan going forward for learning the answers or figuring this out?
So far, there is a lot of consensus.
Okay.
And even though people have different positions and different interests and different perspectives on situations, there are a lot of shared needs. And so my sense so far from what I've heard is that drastic change isn't really needed or even wanted right now. But there are a lot of calls for greater transparency. So even though a lot of this model was created out of the community, if you think about the size of the community overall versus the number of people that are involved in the day-to-day operations, it's enormous disparity. And so there are a lot of people who just don't know how this works, what's happening, and people want to know more so that in the future, anything that arises out of the community working group or any big decisions that get made don't come as a surprise to the extent that perhaps they have in the past. People recognize that there is a need for privacy and confidentiality, but they also want that transparency. So we need to figure out what that balance is. How that is enacted can come in a variety of ways. It could be, you know, greater, a larger community working group. It could be more insight into how the community working group is operating. It could be more communication coming out of the community working group. It could also have to do with the relationship between the Drupal Association and the community and some small ways in which the DA can be of greater service to the community when it comes to dispute and conflict resolution. People are not calling for a total revision of the code of conduct. I think a lot of people feel that it's working well. There might be more depth that it can go into. There might be more clarity that that it can offer. And it may be that Dries's role needs to shift in some small ways, but I don't think it's going to be a massive change. And I think that these are changes that Dries has already been asking for and that the community is supporting him in. So I see what is being called for as being a great next step and really bringing the Drupal community to its next stage of maturity without pulling the rug out under anything or suggesting that what is the way things are designed now is fundamentally broken. I don't think that's the case, but there are definitely areas where it can be improved.
Wendy, when you're talking about the community's feelings on this and kind of the information that you've distilled out of that, that's stuff that has come out of these sessions that you've held, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And can you explain to me how that actually kind of worked? Like, I didn't go to one of the online sessions and I wasn't at DrupalCon. So what did I miss out on? Like, how did you interact with the community and get this information?
All right. Well, thank you for asking that. And also, I just want to start by saying you haven't missed out on anything.
Ooh.
For anyone that's listening that feels like they have ideas and concerns that they want to give voice to, we are going to continue to provide ample opportunity for that to happen. So this is not a one-time thing where you just had to be there and if you missed it, too bad. It's quite the opposite. We are going to be working on other ways for people to continue to share what they would like to see changed, and for that feedback to continuously be included in the work that we're doing. The sessions themselves, though, there were a finite number of them, mostly because of where the community was at the time that we designed these and people really expressing a need to communicate in real time with one another, to hear each other out and to get heard themselves. And so all of the 14 sessions that we held were the same, regardless of whether they were in person or online. We facilitated them with the same approach, same techniques. Of course, you know, seven of them, we were all in a room together, and the other seven, we were on Zoom with, you know, usernames and video and phone. But that the difference is pretty much stopped there. The ground rules for these sessions are based in the principles of nonviolent communication. And nonviolent communication, as it's affectionately known, NVC, is a practice that was developed many years ago that has an international recognition that is a practice of building empathy. And it's a practice that I use in my work quite a bit. And the intention of using NVC principles as the ground rules for these discussions was so that the discussions would focus on people's personal feelings and needs and finding the common ground of all participants, rather than getting stuck in judgments and criticisms of blame and shame that unfortunately can arise in a lot of community discussions. So because we laid those ground rules and we started every session with all of the participants in the room, whether in the physical room or the virtual room, agreeing to those ground rules, we were able to have discussions that were incredibly respectful and considerate, balanced. And though people certainly had a lot of energy around what their concerns were, they were able to express themselves from the heart rather than pointing fingers at other people. And my role was to translate what they said into NVC terms, meaning what are you feeling? Are you overwhelmed by all of this? Are you feeling confused? And then what are you needing? More clarity, more transparency, more communication, more insight. And we helped to find what those shared needs are across the community. And as I said, there was a tremendous amount of consistency from discussion to discussion. Even though who attended was different, their views were different, you know, what they do for a living, how Drupal is a part of their career is different for everybody. But there were a lot of shared needs and a lot of shared strategies for how to best get those needs met. So I'm really encouraged by what we're finding out here.
And the notes for those are online, correct?
Yes, we had an independent note taker in every session, volunteers who came into the room and took notes, eliminating all names and personally identifying information just on what topics were being said, what the general discussion was. And we posted all of those we're calling them meeting minutes. We posted them all on D.O, and you can find those minutes at drupal.org/community/discussions.
Okay.
And well, the minutes for all of the in-person and the virtual community discussions are there.
Okay, and we'll throw that into our show notes too. So the blog that was posted on the Drupal Association's website mentions a multi-phase approach to redesign Drupal community's governance models, management, and decision-making practices, and it references a number of steps. Is there a timeline for those steps? When can we expect to see, you know, I don't know, the next step? And is this going to be done this year? Is this a multi-year thing? What's it like going forward?
So as we shared a little bit in that post, the hopeful timeline, what we're aiming at, is to share some preliminary findings in the next couple weeks with the community. Mm-hmm. We are likely to have some form of survey or feedback form that we will share with the global community as well, to ensure that those who weren't able to participate in the community discussions, or for whom that wasn't the right avenue to participate, can still express themselves as part of this immediate round of feedback that we're gathering right now. Mm-hmm. And there will be more information on that in the next couple weeks as well. And then once we have greater clarity on what the ultimate findings are, that will be published. And we will then take those findings into some form of governance summit. Now, something like this has happened in the past. It was a long time ago. But what we want to do is identify people in the community that represent all corners of the community to come together and take what we've discovered from these community discussions and other methods that we're using to gather feedback to then put into practice some of these changes and devise what those strategies need to be, what the next steps need to be, who's going to be responsible for what, and how that's all going to be executed on. That governance summit we're hoping to have sometime in the next couple months. We're still figuring out what that looks like, and it's being driven by the community. So it's not me, it's not Megan or anyone else unilaterally deciding what that looks like. So because of that, it's going to take a little bit longer for it to take shape and for it to happen. But we're in the works figuring that out, and we have some feedback on that from the discussions as well. And then coming out of that, we should have more clarity on what the timeline is going to be that it will take to execute these changes. So the way that I think about this is like any design project or, you know, any website that we are working on. There's the discovery phase, which is what we're in now, and we're wrapping up as we synthesize these findings. Then there's going to be the planning phase, which is what we'll be in when we're working on the governance summit or some form of it, where we're bringing representatives from the community together to work on strategies and next steps. Then there's the build phase, where we're actually starting to execute on some of this stuff, and that's going to take some time. And then iterate and hopefully continue with this process for as long as Drupal exists, so that the community governance is something that is always evolving and is always reflecting the needs and wants of the community and growing alongside it.
Will this summit be in person? Will it be online? And how many people do you expect to invite? And I won't hold you to that, but I'm just kind of curious.
We do not yet have anything confirmed on either of those fronts. Personally, I find in person to be the best way for people to come together and hash out these challenging topics. However, this is a global community, mm-hmm. and Drupal has been built online. So it may very well be that this is something that happens virtually. We don't yet know what is feasible to do in person and what will need to happen online. We do not yet know how many people will be involved. We do not yet know who those people will be or what the differing levels of involvement will be. And again, it's because Megan and I aren't sitting here and deciding how it should be for everybody else. We're really including the whole community to help decide what the right path forward is. The community is in the driver's seat here. So as facilitators of this, you know, we can't really accelerate it any faster than the community is ready to go. And we're going to take it one step at a time until we figure out what the best way forward is.
Where can a community member with really strong ideas and really strong feelings and really great ideas get involved? How can they jump in right now?
At this moment in time, before we have any forms or surveys or things of that nature deployed that are accessible for members of the community to use to communicate with us, I would encourage people in the meantime to contact me directly. My email address is whitney@whitneyhess.com. I have had many people reach out to me already who either weren't able to participate in the community discussions or didn't feel like that was the right way for them to participate. They've reached out to me directly to express themselves. Some of them just want to be heard and they want their feedback incorporated in the findings. Other people want to be more actively involved. There is really no one way to participate, just as it is with all things Drupal. There are so many different kinds of contributions, and people need to decide for themselves what the right contribution is for them. But until we have more formal methods for getting involved, I encourage people to email me, and you're welcome to share my email in the show notes as well.
Okay. These changes that are happening, these are affecting the community part of Drupal's governance. They're not going to, my understanding is that they're not going to affect any type of Drupal core or documentation, security, or technical working group. Is that correct?
So far, that is what we believe. Mm-hmm. In general, the feedback was largely around the community and its governance models. But mm-hmm. I can't make any promises. Again, everything is on the table, and we want to ensure that the community is driving what changes here. So I can't say with total certainty that other areas of the project won't be affected, but that's not what we are assuming going into it, and that's not how it's currently panning out based on the feedback that we've heard. If you go and take a look at the meeting minutes, and if you have the fortitude to read through all 14 of them yourself, you'll see that what people are really talking about here is community, mm-hmm. but there are still other views. So we're not counting anything out just yet.
Where can a community member actually stay abreast of the latest happenings? So when you do have more news about the future, where is that going to be published? How's that working?
We are going to continue to post where we have been in the Drupal Association section of the blog, but Megan can give more information about what that will look like long term.
Yeah, happily. I mean, we are feeling our way through this, so I'm not sure all of the kinds of communications that will come out, but of course, we have our blog is, and we just got a new one, so I'm typing it in to remember, Drupal.org. You caught me. Drupal.org/association/blog. But if you follow us on @DrupalAssoc, we also tweet it. We'll put it in our newsletter. I Drop follows us, and kind of amplifies our news as well. So mm-hmm. We try to just use all the channels we can to make sure the community knows where we are, where we're going next, and how to get involved in the process.
Okay. So, like, outside of just, like, hosting the blog and just kind of keeping people updated, does the DA have any other direct role in the in these community discussions or these governance changes or anything like that that we should know about?
No, we're really here to support. We want the community to feel that they have agency and how they govern themselves and how they figure that out. When it comes time to say the governance summit, we would like a seat at the table, as the association is just, you know, we're all in this together, and we want to understand our role with the community. And there's one of the themes coming up is boundaries, and where do we begin? Where does the community governance begin? Right. So we were not part of the first round of these kinds of discussions in the original governance summit. So I think that would be one thing that would be a change that people could expect, is we want to be at the table and make sure it's collaborative. But again, we come from a supportive position.
Whitney, do you have anything else that you want to add or anything else that you didn't have the opportunity to say?
Well, I definitely want to just express my gratitude for all people in the Drupal community, certainly the Drupal Association included, for allowing me to participate in this way. You know, as I said earlier, there are all kinds of contributions to the Drupal community, and I'm not a programmer, and it's been a long time since I've been a designer, and it's really exciting to get to contribute with the skills that I have and in the work that I love. And I see this as an opportunity for other people who may not have, you know, felt that they could contribute code, to contribute in other ways by participating in these discussions, by participating in executing on these changes. It's a very exciting time to be a part of Drupal, and it's a recognition that this is a very strong community across the world that wants to continue making itself better. And that's a nice change in the times that we're in, and it's wonderful to be a part of it.
Whitney, have you come across any other communities that are just this passionate about software?
No.
Translation, are we weird?
I truly think that the Drupal community is passionate about people, and software is the tool in which that happens. I have just seen some incredible relationships in this community, and more forming all the time. So I think software is really just the vehicle to it.
Right on. I love that. That's great. Do you have any final thoughts, Megan?
No, I mean, I just kind of echo what Whitney said. It's always an honor to serve the community. I've been doing it I'm in my seventh year. I know. And I've seen a lot of changes. I've seen two releases in my time, and in maturity of the community from one release to the next. And I think it's pretty amazing that our community cares so much, and that they want to take things to the next level in terms of their own governance, because what that means to me is they're gearing up to be ready for even more growth and more progress in the future. And that's really exciting to me. And I'm proud to be a part of it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, if you have anything to say, you can retweet us at Lullabot. We're usually there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can also rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever we have our stuff published.
What is
that's
Stitcher?
How people find it. You know, I added us to Stitcher. I have not used Stitcher. So it's okay. This newfangled thing. We're not cool enough to use it, really.
All right. Well, of course, you can always leave a comment on the podcast node. And, you know, if you have anything to
say. We went over this before. It's not. It's decoupled, so it's not a node.
Close enough.
You usually were pretty good, but there was one time where someone, I'm not going to name names, but it wasn't me, lost the audio.